Essay 13. The woods were majestic today. First take, breathtaking. Just yesterday, everything looked lackluster, licked. I knew better, having been through this before, but you never know for sure about anything. The lower deck of the cloud-throttled sky was disrupted with infusions of blue, fierce blue, the higher sky fighting back, breaking through. The air was the kind of crisp that yanks eyes wide, even if you haven't slept well, the outside flying through them as if the head inside is a vacuum, sucking it all in. The trees looked regal, all of them, almost bare, standing there, legions of them, arrayed as far as the eye can see, relaxed, at ease, leaning on their long, tanned limbs. Carol was like that, regal. Big winds, hard rain, came and went in her life as big and hard as any you can think of, taking, taking, taking what she loved, what she wanted to hold on to, taking. I know almost every detail of it, 62 years of it, loss after loss after loss, sobering. I don't know how she made it as far as she did. Well, I do. It's built into that word. Regal. We operate normally on the basis of what look to me now like such trivial concepts of death. You're alive, 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 and then in one second you die. That's ludicrous. Every life in this world is taken, 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 every second of every day. Big winds, hard rain, yes, sometimes. But even more so, sleepy eyes, unawake. They take too, but what they miss, leaf back. Their focus always on one falling leaf instead of the whole spectacle emerging, evolving, until today. These trees, still standing. Regal. Carol's life was being taken from the second she entered the world, umbilical cord wrapped around her neck, strangling her. She was supposed to die right then, they said. She didn't. I could go on for pages to detail both the horrific and quotidian losses she had to endure. All the time she was supposed to die and didn't. I won't, except to say that if my life had been like that, I would not have made it. Maybe you would, not me. I don't even know how I survived last winter. She lived almost as many winters like that as these trees have. She stood there, like they do, over and over, and took it, keeping watch over both what was left alive down to the roots and what was not, all those fallen fellows strewn around on the ground. Regal. I've been thinking and writing a lot about love this month. Part of that is informed by our discussions in the seminar room, starting with Plato, and part emerging from what I have lost and now long for. Plato's Phaedrus, our first reading, takes love as its express theme, this dialogue that explores all of the intricacies of speaking, writing, how we use the words we use for what. They are saying and doing, in the context of his text, inseparable, as they are in John's Gospel. What a remarkable and accurate way of thinking about what words are for. They may arise before the flesh, but can only take their meaning from it and return to it if we are to live right. Love. That's why I had to go back to that little scene with Lo Fu, had to know what he meant by possession, not just because I prefer not to think of perception as a mode of possession, at some mechanical level it may be, but because I prefer to think of perception as a mode of love. And I wanted to believe that both H.D. and Lo Fu were thinking the same thing. If the words that emerge from perception are not informed in some way by love, they are boring to me, empty of life, all that mattered either already having fledged or never having been in the nest to begin with. Likewise for the perceptions that follow them, equally fulsome, saturating a temporal space measured on the one hand in miles, on the other in microns. My perception of time this year has been like that, the temporal equivalent of miles and microns at the same instant. What I saw on February 17th is happening in the back of my head every second of every day on a time loop with no intervals, over and over. I know that trauma has this aspect to it. When it repeats in the memory, it is just as vivid and impactful as the event itself. Carol had that sort of memory about her past. Not just the traumas, all of it, as far as I could tell. When she'd recall an event, a person, a moment, it was right there. Every minute detail, the emotions, all of it. I was never like that in relation to any part of my past, until last winter. By the same token, the time intervening between then and now has been blasting past at an astronomical speed as I engage in my process, not so much of recovery as rebirth. I died. A new me took my place. Now I am having to grow into that me day by day, week by week. Not quite like a baby. I still have the same old body, the same old job, the same old life around me. I can simulate my old self well enough in all those places that no one really notices. But inside, I have to become something new, and it is happening at a breakneck pace. This creates its own set of social difficulties for me. Most of the people who see me do so once every few months. Their time is real time. My time is dog time on crack, every day a week or two or more, speeding by. So when they meet me for an hour or so after what has been for me many intervening years and ask, "How are you?" They might as well be asking a graduating senior they haven't seen since the eighth grade, "Well, how have things been going since I saw you last?" In those situations, you have only two options. You can give them the five-volume version or the five-word version. And as every graduating senior knows, when asked that question, no one, I mean no one, wants the five-volume version. They, like me, use the five-word version. It's been going pretty well. You might right now be wishing, "I had just said that simply on page one of this book and stop there." I probably would have if I just hadn't been so pissed. Instead, it's a book. But at least it's not a five-volume book. You're welcome.